Morning. The gospel this morning comes from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 19, verses 1 through 10. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. A man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. He wanted to see who Jesus was, but because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up to him and said, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today." So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. All the people saw this and began to mutter, "He has gone to be the guest of a sinner." But Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, "Look, Lord, here and now I give half of my possessions to the poor, and if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount." Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, because this man too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost." The word of God for the people of God.
We are in a series, in case you're just tuning in this morning for the first time, just here this morning for the first time, we're in a series called The Mess, and that's why this pile of junk is to my right. It's representative of some of that. And last week, I talked about how the image of God is within us, but it is in need of restoration, that we are covered by sin. And we looked at those paintings from the Sistine Chapel last week and talked about that. And this week, we will be talking about sort of the next step in that, which is God present in that mess? Is God available to us? And so if you would bow your heads and pray for me and with me, I'd be very grateful. Lord, I pray that the words of my mouth and the meditation of our hearts would be acceptable in your sight, for you, O Lord, are our strength and our Redeemer. And I ask your blessing that the words that are here might benefit those who have gathered and those who listen, that the conversation you would like to have with them could happen, the one that the Holy Spirit leads, the one that continues after we leave this place. For this I pray in Jesus' name, amen. A man is in his bathrobe. He's looking out the little window that's next to the front door, and he's examining the snow outside. The driveway is cleared, but it has ice on it. There's a little thin strip of a sidewalk, and he can see the morning's paper laying on that sidewalk. His wife left a few minutes ago for work. His kids spent the night at someone else's house last night, and so the house is his. He is alone, and he wants more than anything to sit and drink a cup of coffee and read the paper in total silence. Some of you are smiling. You have done this before, I can tell. It's about 6 degrees Fahrenheit outside. But he decides in that moment, he's going for it. And so he opens his front door and he begins down the walkway and onto the driveway. And it is there when he's on the driveway that he feels a gust of wind, and he turns around in time to see the front door close, and he hears an ominous click. And he realizes three things in that moment. Number one, he is in bare feet. Number two, a bathrobe is really not that thick when you're outside. And number three, he has no key to that house. And as he stands there, what felt so logical just a few minutes ago now leaves him with this question. And this is the question I really want you to think about. How did I get here? Now, I think that's a question that people think about a lot. I think we think about that question more than we realize. How did I get here? I mean, we're just going through life, and Suddenly a woman has an argument with her husband, and it's a particularly terse argument. And finally that argument sort of ends. It doesn't resolve, it just ends. And as she steps away from that argument, she thinks about, he used to be my best friend. And we have this type of conversation a lot. How did we get here? A man stands in front of a bathroom mirror. He's not been feeling that well lately. When he walks, he feels like he creaks. He looks at himself in the mirror. He has gained a lot of weight. It's been a long time since he has really done any exercise. He really doesn't think much about his diet. He doesn't eat that well. He doesn't eat that poorly, but he doesn't eat that well. He's not very intentional about anything related to his health, and he's tired a lot. And as he stands in the bathroom mirror, he thinks to himself, you used to be really in shape. You used to feel good. How did you get here? A woman is just going through life, and she's going through life, and the phone rings, and somebody calls, and she says, no, you know what, thank you for calling. Yeah, I know. Do call again. But no, I don't want to go. I'm not going to go out for dinner tonight. I feel like just having an evening at home. And she puts down the phone, and she thinks to herself, I'd just rather be sad at home alone than fake it with friends. But as she thinks that, she realizes that's about the third invitation she's turned down this week. And now she's going to spend the night in her condominium by herself. And she's sad a lot. And she thinks to herself, I used to be the one that made the invitations. How did I get here? I think it's a question that many of us find a lot. And I could probably give you 100 examples. How did I get here? And sometimes we realize that our life is not perhaps a total mess, but has some mess in it. Messes come in many forms, and all of them have stories. All of them, if you pull back and look at the sequencing of how we got to a certain state in a certain space, we realize there's a story. Zacchaeus, this morning in the Bible, he's now talk about a guy whose life was a mess. His was a mess. Zacchaeus was a bad little man, is what we should teach our children. If you teach your children that he's a wee little man, he sounds sort of like a happy elf, but he wasn't. He wasn't a happy little elf. He was a bad man. He was a terrible man. He was a tax collector in Jericho. Jericho was a good-sized city in those days, but it was small enough that I would estimate that probably everybody in that town knew Zacchaeus, if he was, in fact, the chief tax collector. We don't know if that meant he had administrative oversight or if that meant that he was the most successful tax collector. We're really not sure what that means, but what we do know is that he was wealthy on money wrung from his neighbors. Last week when I preached, Jesus told a parable about a tax collector, and I explained that tax collectors essentially extorted money from their neighbors. Rome gave them the authority to walk up to people and say, you owe Rome this much, but Rome didn't pay the tax collector much. Rome granted him authority to take the extra and pay himself, and Zacchaeus was rich. There's only one way he got rich. He took money from the vulnerable, and he had the weight of Rome behind him, so he really could do anything he wanted. He's a bad man. And he was hated by his neighbors. He was welcomed, hated by all, welcomed by none. The harm that Zacchaeus inflicted was real. The money that he stole was real. This week is not a parable. But when you think about Zacchaeus' story, you have to ask yourself, does anybody really set out to make that their story? Does anybody set out to say, you know what, I want to be isolated. I want to be hated. I want to be despised. And I wonder if Zacchaeus that day thought to himself, how did I get here? This well-known rabbi is passing through town. Everybody's gathering on the streets. Nobody will let Zacchaeus up front to see him. How did I get to the place where nobody likes me? Did Zacchaeus, when he was a child, say, one day when I grow up, I want to be a tax collector? You know, sometimes when you're in a mess, it's because somebody left a mess. You know, maybe Zacchaeus was raised by really dysfunctional people who loved wealth and worshiped wealth and taught their children to get wealth no matter what they had to do. You know, there are those of us who have stories that include the values of our family that we have had to set aside because they weren't worthy values. Sometimes people leave us in our mess. But it's still our mess. Not our fault, but it will be our responsibility. Maybe Zacchaeus pursued the wrong values himself. Maybe Zacchaeus loved security so much that he would do anything to get it, hold it at any price. We don't know his story, but we do know that today something has happened to Zacchaeus today. And maybe he was wondering how he got to that place, or maybe he remembered God. Sometimes I think we just remember God. Sometimes in my life, maybe in yours, God comes to me like a tune. And I can remember the tune, but I can't recall the words. You ever had that happen? And it's like I can sense that God's here, but I can't see it still. Like when you're walking down a street in a city and you smell this amazing smell of food, and you know the restaurant must be nearby, and you go one way and then you go the other, but you can't find the restaurant. You ever had that happen? Sometimes I think we have a memory of God that makes us think about better things, better days, greater possibilities. Maybe Zacchaeus had that moment that day. Maybe he had that flash of insight and recognition looking for something. Why else would he climb that tree? Do not miss the absurdity of how he looked. Don't miss how ridiculous it looks when a rich, prominent man, a man who others feared. Zacchaeus is a guy that when he walked down the street, people would get away because they didn't want him to see and think, oh man, he might come over and get more money from me, right? And so don't miss the ridiculous nature of Zacchaeus and his really nice tunic. You ever been to a toga party? Don't raise your hands if you have. I want you just to think about, and especially for men, because we don't think in terms of what is essentially a long skirt. We don't think that way, but in terms of the wardrobe. But imagine climbing a tree in a tunic. How absurd you would feel. And you have to ask yourself, I want you to ask yourself, what is it that got him to climb the tree? And there's Jesus. And there's Jesus passing by, Zacchaeus taking the risk to get up in the tree because something got him up in that tree. And just in that moment, Jesus is passing by and something tells Zacchaeus, you've got to see Jesus. Now, here's what I want you to notice about Jesus. So I've been asking you to think about Zacchaeus. I want you to change your perspective. I want you to put it on Jesus. And when you think about Jesus, what I want you to notice today is this. Have you ever noticed how Jesus has great timing? Have you ever noticed that? How Jesus just always seems to come at the right time. And we can say, well, you know, those gospel writers, maybe they manipulated that, maybe that wrote that in. But I think it's more that Jesus is just always coming at the right time. Like Jesus showing up right when the man's daughter died. Do you remember that? Right when the daughter died. Well, don't go in, she just died. Or the boy, just when he had fallen to the ground, and he's having seizures, and the disciples are trying to help, and Jesus walks up. Or that woman, condemned to death because she's caught in adultery, and just as they're raising their arms, Jesus walks in. Or the other woman, do you remember the woman on the street? So desperate because she's been sick for years, and she has been bleeding for years. And just when she's so desperate and she sees Jesus and she reaches out, he just happens to be there that day. Or the Roman centurion whose servant had become ill. Do you remember him? And the guy is so worried about his servant that he walks a great distance just to see if there's something that could help. And Jesus shows up just then. And what I want you to gather in that is this, in your life, Jesus always shows up at the right time. We have a name for that in the church. We have we've actually turned that into a theological category to help us hold on to it and to think about its truth. We call that, are you ready for this? We call that, you've heard me use this phrase before, prevenient grace. Would you say that phrase with me? Prevenient grace. Now, the people at home did not do that because you thought that by live streaming, you wouldn't have to say the thing out loud. But right there in your home, with your family or your friends or whoever you're with, we're all going to say it together in here. Would you say it loud enough to encourage them? Are you ready? Those two words. Ready? One, two, three. Prevenient grace. Now, why do I want you to learn that word? I want you to learn the phrase for this reason. You are going to be sorely tempted in your life to think at times, God is not with me. Because most of us have been raised to believe that God is only with us when we're good enough or doing all the right things. But what I would suggest to you is that Jesus doesn't typically show up when people are doing all the right things. Jesus usually shows up when everything is going bad. When everything's gone wrong, and he usually shows up to people who deserve his presence the least. Have you ever noticed in the Gospels, there aren't many stories of Jesus showing up in somebody's living room saying, I just am here to thank you because you've got it all right. You're living properly, you love each other, you have the best marriage in town. You are fantastic. And I'm here to bless you and to go on my way to the next family that has the perfect people. That's not who he comes to. Zacchaeus is up in a tree and his life's a mess and Jesus looks at him and from all the people Jesus can choose from, Jesus looks at him and says, Zacchaeus, today I'm going to have dinner in your house. Prevenient grace is the idea that God is always in front of you. That God is always running ahead of you, that God is always pursuing you, that even when you've given up on yourself, God is still seeking you to make something beautiful out of the mess or that pocket of your life that is a mess. Now, the people in town wouldn't have liked this one bit. What is he going to do going into Zacchaeus' home? Why is he going into his home? Why? Because when a man of Jesus' stature in that time, who was a prominent person, well-known, had taught to huge crowds in Galilee, when he comes and stays in Zacchaeus' home, even for just one meal, Jesus brings honor to the house. Now, we often think of it this way. I'd like to honor you by inviting you to dinner. But in the first century, people actually thought in reverse. I am honoring you by going to your house. And so Jesus isn't being impolite, inviting himself to dinner. Jesus is doing what would have been normative in that time. I choose you. And I want you to think about your own life. I want you to think about your own life in the messy part of your life and imagine today, just imagine, what if Jesus is saying to you today, I choose you? Because so often what we think is, when I get my life all straightened out, when I clean out my pile of junk, when I haul it off, when I take it to the landfill, and when I get this all cleaned up and looking just nice, that's when God will come and see me and notice me. But the scriptures say the opposite. And it is counterintuitive because very few religions work this way. Most religions work on the thought that if you can create merit in your life, then you will deserve God's blessing. Christianity is quite different. Christians believe that God comes to us despite ourselves. Jesus just barges right into Zacchaeus' life, offering him things he cannot buy and things he does not deserve. And Jesus doesn't care what anybody else thinks. That's the other great thing about this, friends. I know you're worried sometimes. You think, well, God wouldn't come into my life because I, you know, this portion of my life or this secret that nobody else knows, and if I would share the secret, nobody else would like me, and here's the secret. Jesus doesn't care what other people think. Why? Because Jesus just loves us with such a pursuing love, such an abandon. It's like, remember several years ago, the movie Finding Nemo came out? And at the beginning of the movie, Nemo and his father are swimming through the ocean together. But then Nemo sort of goes off and wanders off, and Nemo gets picked up by the net, and Nemo ends up in an aquarium. In the, was it a dentist's office? I've got a mild phobia about dentists, and so, like, being a fish in an aquarium at a dentist's office is the third realm of hell for me. And if you're a dentist, I love your work, I'm great, my mouth and I thank you, but it would be my little phobia. And so, you know, that is, wow, Nemo's stuck in the dentist's office in the aquarium, and there he is, and his father, the question that Nemo has, Nemo thinks, his dad's forgotten about him. And so I just thought I'd show you that little clip this morning.
Oh, Nigel, you just missed an extraction.
Oh, has he loosened the periodontal ligament with the elevator yet? What am I talking about? Nemo, where's Nemo? I've got to speak with him.
What? What is it?
Your dad's been fighting the entire ocean looking for you.
My father? Really?
Really?
Oh, yeah. He's traveled hundreds of miles. He's been battling sharks and jellyfish,
sharks?
All sorts of...
That can't be him.
Are you sure? What was his name? That's some sort of sport fish or something. Tuna? Trout?
Marlin?
That's it. Marlin, the little clownfish from the reef.
It's my dad! He took on a shark!
I heard he took on three.
Three?
Three
sharks?
That's gotta be 4,800 teeth!
You see, kid, after you were taken by Diver Dan over there, your dad followed the boat you were on like a maniac.
Really?
He's swimming, and he's giving it all he's got, and then three gigantic sharks capture him, and he blows him up, and then dives thousands of feet where he gets chased by a monster with huge teeth. He ties the steam to a rock. What does he get for a reward? He gets to battle an entire jellyfish forest. But now he's riding with a bunch of sea turtles in the East Australian Current, and the word is he's headed this way, right now, to Sydney.
Wow.
Oh, what a good day.
He was looking for you after all, shark bait. He's swimming to the filter. Shark bait!
Not again.
Don't you? You kind of want to watch the whole thing there, right, and see it. Your dad has been, and then he describes this great adventure. How many times have you just felt like God has forgotten you? And you're standing somewhere and you're thinking to yourself, how did I get here? And usually when that happens, for those of us who are Christ followers, we feel like, if God's forgotten me, I deserve it. I'm the one who swam off. And I love it when this bird comes and sits down with Nemo and says, your dad. And then he battled the sharks. And Nemo says, couldn't have been. Oh, no. Prevenient grace is the thought that we are loved by a pursuing God, that God's Spirit is on the move, searching for us all the time, reminding us of who we are, that we are sons and daughters of this great God in heaven, prodding us to remember Jesus and how much better our life is when we follow him. In Romans 2:4, Paul reminds us the riches of his kindness, forbearance, and patience, that God's kindness is intended to lead us to repentance. And I love in that movie how Nemo doesn't just receive. Hearing of God's love for him, he picks up the rock, and if we would have watched the whole thing, he puts it in the filter because that's the key to Nemo getting out back into the water where he can find his father again. And here is the hopeful thing. Jesus is powerful. When Jesus gets involved and people respond, then things begin to happen. And this is what we so often forget. This is what we forget, is that he is so powerful. And this is the reason that we often don't pray for others who are in a mess. We just leave them to their mess, and we don't. It's not that we don't come and sometimes you can't clean up other, in fact, you can't clean up other people's mess. Can I tell you that? Everybody has to work to clean up their own junk. But sometimes we don't even pray for people to become motivated. And the failure of our theology is the belief that God will not fully love us until we clean it up, or that God actually has no power to help us. And this is not biblical, and it's not correct. We should never grow apathetic. We should never write people off. We should pray earnestly, even if we don't overfunction and start to straighten other people's spaces. We should instead pray that people find Christ. We should share our knowledge of his love. We should share our encouragement of his presence. We forget that if people could see that Jesus was looking for them, it might give them the ability to pick up their own rocks and throw them in their own filters and start their way home again. You can see Jesus' power in Zacchaeus' life. Zacchaeus that day gives half of his wealth to the poor, and he promises to return four times the amount that he took from his people. And what's interesting is in that moment you discover that Zacchaeus actually remembers everything in the Hebrew Bible. He remembers Deuteronomy and Leviticus, where it says, if you steal people's money or if you take what is theirs, you have to give restitution far beyond what you took. Zacchaeus that day goes from bad man to good Jew, a man who remembers his faith and the will of God for his life. Zacchaeus is not so far from God that he has no memory of who he could be. And he demonstrates that in his promise to Jesus. And Jesus says, today I tell you salvation has come to this house, because Jesus once again has found a way to disrupt the story. Jesus has found another way to rewrite the ending, which is his specialty. Because Zacchaeus has found new life, and so, how about you? How about you? I think I know who many of us are. I doubt that many people that are here today, I mean, again, if you are so committed that you came today and are here in this room, if you are so committed that you are sitting at home and turned on a computer and you're live streaming right now, I doubt that your life is a total mess. But have you ever had a time, or is there currently a pocket of your life that you have this question, how did I get here? And if there is, what I want to suggest to you this morning is that tends to be the time when Jesus is most likely to show up. And so the question becomes, what shall we do during this Lent? Many see Lent as a hard season of examination, divine recrimination, and personal guilt. It is not exactly our most wonderful time of year. But what if, in fact, Lent is totally different? What if Lent is, in fact, a wonderful time? A time for us all, a time that all of us desperately need. Yesterday it snowed outside, and my neighborhood received the upper limit of the weather person's prediction. The upper limit. I think at first they were calling for like 2 to 3 inches. I don't know where that came from, because I bet we had 7, 8 inches yesterday. Yesterday, we moved snow several times in the cold. Actually, yesterday I moved snow several times in the cold. Let me be clear. Other members of my family were doing other important things that were contributing to the household, and I'm grateful for them all. But I alone stood out in the snow with implements. In the morning, that morning, yesterday morning, I was here for something, and then I drove home. And by the time I was driving home, people were slipping and sliding, and one car that I passed had a very bad accident, and the front hood was crimped up, and I just thought to myself, wow, this place is a mess. And Lent is like that. Lent is a cold season that we have to shovel and scrape and deal with on our own, with our own stuckness. Lent is a time to examine the depth of our ditch. But this morning, you know, now, I don't know about you, but I went to bed tired last night. Lower back, a little tired. I was tired. But this morning I woke up. And I woke up this morning to the sound of the robin song right outside our window. There was, I think it was a robin, and it was singing. And I was so surprised. And I thought, would someone tell the bird to quit complaining? We already know it's cold. I don't need you outside my window waking me up. And I laid in bed and I listened to the robin's song, and I realized that the robin was not bringing a song of complaint. The robin was bringing a song to remind us that new life is coming, that soon the snow will melt and the cold shall pass. The robin was singing a song whose tune I remembered but whose words I have forgotten. But the longer I listened, the longer I realized the robin was telling me of the coming of the presence of God, which we most need in a season of self-examination when we have to be honest with ourselves that everything in our life is not well. It's a song that says, God is not just with you. God is searching for you. God is walking your way. God is here for those who have eyes to see and ears to hear. Always showing up at the right time, always leading us from the dark valleys in which we currently reside to places of light and hope. And that, my friends, is a song of prevenient grace. That life would be nothing but winter save that song. And so now I pray for you as I close the sermon. I pray for me. I pray for the season of Lent. Not a sad, cold season, but a time of hope to realize that despite our messes, God's love is unfailing. Would you bow your heads, whether at home or in the sanctuary, would you bow your heads and be in prayer?